response to the US's aggressive trade policy, there is a growing argument for African countries to focus on de-dollarization and create more independent trade structures within the global south. Now, Mr. Chibuka, how can de-dollarization and the establishment of independent trade structures help African countries mitigate the impact of external economic pressures such as an aggressive trade policy from the US?
Therefore, it is incumbent upon Africa to take this opportunity to break away from the US dollar. The US dollar was the reserve currency and is steadily declining in terms of nation states that are dependent on the US dollar. So this is an opportunity for Africa to become less dependent and use the mechanism of de-dollarization through the BRICS Alliance and other mechanisms, so that when the US dollar declines, finally, it won't affect Africa as much. It won't be as disruptive, because the handwriting is on the wall for the US dollar. It is declining on a global scale, and the African nations have to be able to adjust, or they will go down if they keep dependency on the US dollar. Therefore, de-dollarization is a must in Africa.
South Africa has been hit hard by the Trump tariffs. The ANC-led coalition government has struggled to respond effectively, while some critics argue that South Africa's response lacked urgency or forcefulness, especially given the economic stakes. Pretoria has clearly taken diplomatic and strategic steps.
Ms. Bakare Yusuf will have the last word today. Now, what steps should African governments take to ensure that they are better prepared for such economic shocks in future?
We wait, like I said earlier, we wait on until the problem lands in our country, slaps us in the face before we start to respond. Why isn't there anybody looking to the future and planning? That is what African countries must do. African leaders must start to look, visionize a really strong and independent Africa, and continue to plan, not just plan, implement, not just implement, create the structure, the framework, the foundation to build that vision on. But you can't do that again if you don't invest in your education. So now we come to social structure. You've got to invest in your education, because you have to be ready to pass on the baton to the next generation. Yet again, we've got the likes of Paul Biya, who are wanting to run again and again and again. So the youth, of course, they feel despondent. They're in despair. They don't see a future.
Well, there you have it. Africa needs to have visionary leaders and invest in education for the continent to be free of manipulation by the likes of Trump. I'd like to thank our guests today, Ireti Bakare Yusuf and Zizwe Chibuka, for their incisive analysis. Now let's proceed to the next part of our program, honoring Africa's remarkable civilizations, which are the cornerstone of its vibrant cultural legacy. In today's fast-evolving world, it's increasingly important for young Africans to reconnect with their heritage. Now, preserving this identity is key to shaping a confident and empowered future. My colleague, Janatali, will share more on this.
Hello, I'm Janet Ali, and welcome to a series of programs that will delve into some of the ancient African civilizations. As Africa moves to become a focal point of the world's economy, reflecting on the continent's rich civilization is critical to preserve its pure identity. Today, let us get to know more about the Songhai civilization. ¶¶ Songhai Empire, one of the largest and most powerful civilizations in West African history. This civilization emerged in the 15th century and was centered around the Niger River. The empire's capital was the city of Gao, but it's also included other significant cities like Timbuktu and Djenne. The rise of the Songhai Empire began under the leadership of Sunni Ali in the 1460s. Sunni Ali expanded the empire's territories through military conquests and established control over crucial trade routes. His successor, Asfiya Muhammad, further centralized the administration, promoting Islam and implementing a legal system based on Islamic law. Under Asfiya Muhammad's rule, the empire experienced a golden age marked by political stability, economic prosperity, and cultural flourishing. The Songhai Empire's achievements were numerous. Timbuktu and Djenne became renowned centers of learning, attracting scholars and students from across the Islamic world. The empire's wealth was built on trans-Saharan trade, dealing in gold, salt, and other valuable commodities. The Songhai military was also formidable, utilizing cavalry and riverine forces to maintain control over their vast territories. However, the decline of the Songhai Empire began in the late 16th century. Internal strife and succession disputes weakened the central authority. In 1591, the Moroccan army invaded the Songhai Empire equipped with firearms, which gave them a significant advantage over the Songhai forces. The Battle of Tondibi marked the end of Songhai dominance, and the empire gradually fragmented into smaller states. Despite its decline, the legacy of Songhai civilization still endures. Efforts to preserve the heritage of the Songhai include protecting historical sites like the Sankore Madrasa in Timbuktu, a UNESCO World Heritage Site. Timbuktu's ancient manuscripts, which contain invaluable knowledge on various subjects, are being digitized and preserved to safeguard the cultural and intellectual achievements of the Songhai era. That was a brief description of the Songhai civilization. From me, Jannat Ali, it's goodbye for now.
Well, and that brings us to the end of this week's edition of Africa Today. It's always great having you. On behalf of the entire crew, it's me, Mubarak Kenya, saying goodbye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Iran Radio, and this is some interesting facts about Holy Quran. Be with us. Chapter Yasin is considered the heart of the Quran for its tremendous benefits for the believer. The best drink according to Quran is milk. In the Quran, Allah also describes the rivers of milk in heaven. The best food, according to Quran, is honey, which cures several problems and is the sweetest gift to humans from Allah. Normally, the Quran declares Friday as the most blessed day of the week, and the month of Ramadan is the best month of the year, and the night of Qadr has been described as a night better than 1,000 months. Its significance is described in chapter Al-Qadr. We'll listen to the continuation of the programs on Iran Radio. Now for this hour, we have Q&A on Islamic beliefs. Then it's time for Spotlight. Coming up next is Q&A on Islamic beliefs. Stay with us.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Answering your doubts and questions. And questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah, who is Ar-Rahman? Allah, who is Al-Mannan? La ilaha illallah.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum. Well, welcome to another episode of the program Q&A on Islamic Beliefs. That is question and answer on Islamic Beliefs. I am Atar, the host of this program. Sheikh Karim is over here from the Islamic House of Qom to answer today's question. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh. Welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, and thank you for having me.
In the text of the Holy Quran, Surah 15, Ayah 29, also Surah 38, Ayah 72, we have a phrase, I breathe into him of my spirit. And my here refers to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So many people might ask, what does it mean exactly by my spirit over here and breathing into this, in fact, human being, Sheikh Karimi? And also, if so, my spirit is the spirit of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala breathed into human beings. So how the existence of evil in human beings and in their actions, we can say, can be justified?
A'udhu billahi minash shaitan ar-rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. First of all, we need to know and we need to understand the true meaning of the verse, نَفَخْتُ فِيهِمْ رُوحِي. As you mentioned, I breathe into it from my soul. Now, min ruhi, from my soul, has led some people to think that as human beings, we share the soul with God. I mean, this soul is something that we have it. Also, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has it, which is not the case. I mean, in the discussions of Kalam and theology, it is proved that, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, of course, he is immaterial. He does not have any body.
Mm-hmm.
But no one knows about the true essence of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. This is one point. And second of all, laysa kamithlihi shay. No one can be compared to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Yes.
So to claim that, I mean, the soul is something that we share with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is a very wrong understanding of the verse. Min ruhi does not mean that the soul that we have within us is the same soul of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. No, not at all. As I explained in one of the previous episodes, technically speaking, this structure in Arabic language is called idafa tashrifiya.
Mm-hmm.
If I would like to explain it through some other examples, we know that the Holy Kaaba is called Baytullah.
Yes.
The house of God. Now, doesn't mean that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is staying there, is residing there. No. That house, that building is called the house of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to show the greatness of this place. So Kaaba is called the house of God because of its great status
mm-hmm.
and value.
All right.
Or the month of Ramadan is called Shahrullah, the month of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Does it mean that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala owns this month and mm-hmm. he does not own the other month? No. It is just to show the greatness and significance of the holy month of Ramadan. So the same is true regarding نَفَخْتُ فِيهِ مِنْ رُوحِ. If ruh, the soul of the human being, is attributed to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, it doesn't mean that it is the same soul of the soul of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. No. It is just showing the greatness of the soul. The fact that, I mean, the true personality of every person is not his or her physical features. Rather, it is their soul.
Does ruh means spirit or soul here?
Yeah.
Or no, it has something else?
No, it means soul and spirit.
Okay, so I mean, it couldn't mean, for example, from the essence of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala or Johar or Zat or something?
No.
Does that mean that?
No.
Okay.
Even in that case, we do not have anything shared between us and the essence of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. As I explained in one of the previous episodes, we do not know about the true essence of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. This is the soul that in chapter Mu'minun, when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala talks about different stages of the creation of human beings, like from nutfa, then to alaqa and mudgha, finally Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, ثُمَّ أَنْشَأْنَاهُ خَلْقًا آخَرٌ. Then we create the human beings with a new creation. Okay. This is the time that the soul is breathed into the human body, right?
Okay.
So this is the same soul that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala refers to in these two verses, نَفَخْتُ فِيهِ مِنْ رُوحِ.
مِنْ رُوحِ, that's right.
Now the question is that I think I have also answered the second part.
That's right.
So the question was that if this is this divine soul, why some human beings turn out to be criminals?
One question. So when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says that I breathe into human beings from my own soul, does it mean that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala does not breathe into other creatures? Like, for example, animals or plants or jinns, okay? Mm-hmm. So this is only specifically for human beings? We have only this ayah about human beings in the Holy Quran?
Yeah. You have two questions. If this is the only verse in the Quran regarding the human being, okay. Yes.
Okay.
For other Christians, we do not have the verse.
Such a
that,
verse, okay.
There is a kind of breathing of divine soul into them. But the point is that, as I mentioned, نَفَخْتُ فِيهِ مِنْ رُوحِ means that the very fact that the human beings are blessed with a soul is done by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Okay. And this soul is great. Is very significant. That is why it is attributed to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
All right.
For other creatures, also, the whole process is done by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. If an animal is created, it is within the power of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And we know that we have also animal soul. We have plant soul.
All right.
Okay. So they are also given these physical features and the animal soul, plant soul by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Mm-hmm.
And also the jinn. But it is only in the case of the human beings that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala mentioned نَفَخْتُ فِيهِ مِنْ رُوحِ because of the greatness of human beings as divine khalifa.
Khalifatullah.
Yeah, Khalifatullah, divine caliph over the earth.
Okay.
And this is not the case for the jinn, for the animals, and for the plants.
All right, very good.
Now, having said that, the same question is mentioned regarding the fitra, the divine innate nature.
Nature, that's right.
So we know that according to the Quran, فَتْرَةَ اللَّهِ الَّتِي فَتَرَ النَّاسِ Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has created human beings with a divine fitra, innate nature. So the question is that if this is the case, then why we have so many people deviating from this straight path?
Mm-hmm.
And the same question that you mentioned, that if this is the soul coming from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, then why do we have criminals?
All right.
The point is that according to the explanation of the Imam of the Ahl al-Bayt alayhimus salam, under the verse, فِتْرَةَ اللَّهِ الَّتِي فَتَرَ النَّاسَ عَلَيْهَا, all human beings are created pure. كُلُّ مَوْلِدٍ يُولَدُ عَلَى الْفِتْرَةِ. Every person is born with the divine innate nature. Then it is their parents that make him or her a Jewish or a Christian. This is a translation of an narration. Which means that every person, when they are born, they are created with this monotheistic tendency.
All right.
Okay. But then we have some factors which mislead the people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we cannot negate the role of those factors. One of them is, for example, what we call it viratha or inheritance.
All right.
I mean, today it is in science, it is proved that to some extent, only factor, but to some extent, the features, the characters, even the beliefs that we have are inherited to us from our parents. And that is why in the verses of the Quran and also in the narrations, there are many points regarding how to choose your spouse, whether for both men and women. We are highly encouraged to be very much cautious and selective in terms of choosing our partner, our spouse, because of the role that they are going to play in the destiny of our children. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in chapter Baqarah, verse 221,
right.
And do not marry polytheistic women until they believe. And a believing slave woman is better than a polytheist, even though she might please you. So here Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says that, I mean, there might be some ladies who might be attractive in terms of physical beauty, but they are polytheist. What matters is the faith, is the iman, and وَلَا تُنْكَحُ الْمُشْرِكِينَ حَتَّى يُؤْمَنُوا. The same is true regarding the men. Addressing women, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, and do not marry polytheistic men until they believe, and a believing a slave is better than a polytheist, even though he might please you. So the point is that this verse and many narrations, they tell us that, for example, إِيَّاكُمْ وَخَضْرَاءَ الدِّمَنِ. The Holy Prophet said, be cautious about خَضْرَاءَ الدِّمَنِ. And the companions asked, what do you mean by الْخَضْرَاءَ الدِّمَنِ? خَضْرَاءُ الدِّمَنِ, the Prophet said, الْمَرْأَةُ الْحَسْنَى فِي مَنْبَتِ السُّوءِ. A beautiful woman, lady, but the one who does not have a good character. So all these verses and narrations tell us that inheritance plays a role in the shaping the physical in shaping the character of our children.
That's right.
So my point is that although all people are created with divine nature, but then there are some characters that they may mislead him or her. One of them is inheritance. The other is environment, place, and time. We shouldn't forget about the role of the, for example, friends, or the country that you live has a role, the city, the neighborhood, and then when you go to a school, the school that you choose for your children,
that's right,
the type of friends that they are associating with. The story of the Noah's son is very famous.
Okay.
He is the son of a prophet. But maybe because of associating bad people, he turns out to be a very wicked person. Mm-hmm. He does not believe in Prophet Nuh alayhi salam. So the Prophet's son, Nuh's son, is born into a believing family. So in terms of inheritance, everything is fine. But because of the fact that he chooses to, associate with negative people, he turns out to be a disbeliever.
Okay.
So to wrap up the discussion, as I mentioned, all these factors, all the people are born with divine innate nature, but then we know that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given us free will. He is not going to force human beings to be monotheistic. No, we have free will. And if we just follow our innate nature, we will remain monotheistic. But as I mentioned, there are factors which may mislead the people. One of them being inheritance. That is why we need to be careful about selecting our, the one that we are going to marry. Imam Ar-Ridha alayhi salam said, regarding a person who was going to marry a person who was suffering from bad temperedness. The Imam says, لا تزوجه إن كان سيء الخلق. If he is a bad-tempered person, then do not marry him. And many other narrations referring to the same point, that inheritance plays a role. Also, the place that we live, the environment, the colleagues, the friends, the school, and so on and so forth, all these play a role in shaping the character of each and every one of us.
Okay, that's right. Of course, this ayah has been interpreted by different scholars in different ways. For example, philosophers like Mullah Sadra have their own elaboration, mystics or Rafa have their own jurisprudence too. So for more elaboration, you have to refer to the books of these scholars in different fields of studies. Thank you, Imam Sheikh Karimi, for a nice elaboration regarding this ayah. It was very kind of you, Sheikh.
My pleasure.
And dear listeners, thank you very much for listening to this episode of Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. Please, for more information, visit our website, iranradio.ir. To another episode, we leave you in Allah's care. Goodbye.
إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن علي
حسيني وحسن بعلي وحسيني وحسن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن
My life has been a journey, where faith is where I roam. But steps I used to walk in don't really match mine no more. I live south of the river, where children are quick to grow. Walking down a street full of distraction, for some they call it home. So take me home.
bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome, everyone. Now, this Thursday marks the beginning of the final stage of Sahand 2025, a major counterterrorism drill hosted by Iran's Islamic Revolution Guard Corps involving military units from the Shanghai Cooperation Organization states. The IRGC chief commander, Major General Mohammad Pakpour, says that Iran, without limitation, is sharing all the valuable experience that it gained from fighting Takfiri terrorism in the region with SCO members and observer states. General Pakpour also emphasized the extensive and high-profile presence of military and security commanders from SCO partners in this exercise is a strong indication of interaction, synergy, and joint will to counter terrorism and enhance lasting security in the region. The fruits of a growing alliance within the SCO to secure regional peace and beyond is a focus of our Spotlight program. But first, here's a report.
Iran has launched a five-day anti-terrorism military exercise in East Azerbaijan province. Sahand 2025 is conducted within the framework of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization as a collective security mechanism to counter terrorist threats and militant groups. With 10 SCO member states participating, Sahand 2025 aims to safeguard peace, enhance military expertise, share counterterrorism experiences, build common understanding, and strengthen coordination among the member states' operational units. The Commander-in-Chief of the Islamic Revolution Guard Corps has emphasized the counterterrorism nature of the exercise, saying that the IRGC has gained invaluable experiences thanks to directly engaging with terrorists, which can be shared with SCO member states.
After overcoming the 12-day imposed war, and despite all pressures and threats, Iran has focused, with national resolve and a strategic outlook, on strengthening regional and international cooperation. Iran's adopted an active and responsible position in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization in terms of collective security. The Islamic Revolution Guard Corps has directly fought Takfiri, separatist, and state terrorists, thus gaining valuable and practical operational experience. We are ready to share these experiences with the SCO member states. The scourge of terrorism is not bound to a certain geography. Confronting this threat requires joint measures, specialized exercises, and exchange of experiences. That's what Sahand 2025 exercise is all about.
The commander of the IRGC ground force has also underscored the anti-terrorist nature of the drill, noting that Iran has long been a victim of terrorism.
This program is an anti-terrorism exercise because Iran has been a victim of terrorism. 17,000 Iranian people have been martyred in terrorist operations.
The drill spans land, naval, air, and drone operations. In the naval phase, warships and rapid reaction units carried out maneuvers against speedboats and secured maritime routes. Ground and coastal forces rehearsed urban clearance, infiltration of militant positions, and neutralization of explosive traps. Reconnaissance drones and electronic warfare systems provided real-time battlefield monitoring, boosting accuracy and reducing risks. General Sergei Kisani, Secretary of the Executive Committee of the SCO Regional Anti-Terrorist Structure, praised Iran's role in combating terrorism and described the exercise as successful.
I can give everyone this assurance. Based on the level of planning and organization, I've witnessed the second phase of the exercise, both the operational stage and other stages, has been successfully carried out.
Beyond its military dimension, Sahand 2025 carries a clear political and strategic message. It reflects the collective will of SCO members to confront transnational terrorism. Iran hosting the drill highlights the country's regional standing and deterrent capability. Officials say the exercise not only boosts regional security, but also signals Iran's readiness to confront transnational threats and play a central role in Eurasian security.
And now for your guests. Joining us, Mr. Masoud Shahzadeh, political commentator and chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, joining us from London. Amateur Ali Murad, political commentator and writer, joining us from the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Gentlemen, hello and welcome you both to the program. I guess, Mr. Shajadeh, we'll start with you out there in London. Your initial take, please, on Iran using these regional partners to forge this anti-terrorism alliance, one that supports, obviously, a multipolarity where no member is another's vassal.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a concept which is understood right across the world, you know, in any region, European region or anywhere else around the world. People share the issues of regional security, and that will give them further security, further sort of ability to stand against those who are trying to undermine the security of not just one nation, but the region as a whole. And that is even more true when it comes to Western Asia. The fact is this, that for too long, colonial powers have abused and undermined the interest of the region. And indeed, they took advantage of it. They sort of created adversaries between different nations, divide and rule, using sort of and promoting and creating sort of militant groups to undermine the security, and it undermine indeed the ability of independence of those nations. And one of the reasons, or one of the main reasons, have been the fact that this is an oil-rich region. And another factor is actually is a corridor between East and the West, and indeed it's got a huge strategic sort of importance. And the fact that now Iran is initiating and encouraging the nations in the region to come together and address this sort of issue of security and anti-terrorism, and coming together, making sure that the region is safe. And the only way to do it is by participation of all those nations, because they are the one who will benefit from security, and they are the one who will benefit from unity.
Thank you there for your initial take, Mr. Shajadeh. And Ali Murad, welcome to the program. Thank you for your patience. Now, Ali, your opening thoughts as well on the IRGC with a number of these SCO member and observer states taking this initiative to share expertise, intel, and form this alliance against terrorism and other possible regional threats without incorporating any extra regional actors in the process.
Well, first of all, it's important that to take into consideration that the security of Asia and the Asian states is important when we are talking about the shaping of the new world order. Because as the Americans are expressing openly that they are still working on penetrating the states, the sovereign states, especially in Central Asia and in regions surrounding China. I think that Iran has a perfect experience here to play a role in safeguarding the regional security when talking about the latest means of the terrorist groups that are trying to penetrate the sovereignty and the trying to shake the security of the Asian states. I think that Iran has a remarkable experience here to provide to all the states that are friendly, that are willing to cooperate on every level, especially the security and the anti-terrorist level. Of course, Iran during the last 15 years was able to possess this experience with all the operations that were carried out by the IRGC, Al-Quds forces in Iraq and Syria. They have been helping local resistance movements and as well as local armies in deterring the terrorist groups, because we know that the Americans and the Zionists, they have been using terrorist groups to penetrate and to topple elected governments in the region, in the West Asia region. And the main example here to provide is Syria, because we have seen in the end that the terrorists who have been aided by the Americans and the Zionists, as well as other regional powers, was able to reach the power and to be the next leader of Syria with the help of the Americans and the, you know, and the babysitting of the Americans. Because we were dealing with an Al-Qaeda terrorist group. Iran was fighting this group in Syria, in Iraq. And for sure that the Americans will sure be will try again to use the same tactic in other sovereign states. And I think that it is the right time now for Iran and other friends in the Asian continent to cooperate and to reach common understandings and to share experiences in this level.
Thank you, Ali. And I'm glad that you referred to and alluded to that the Syria involvement of Iran, because Mr. Masoud Shahjad, that's going to bring me to my next question. We've seen actors in the West persevere to paint this picture of the IRGC as this terrorist organization, while to Ali's point, through either direct involvement, as we saw in Iraq, or in an advisory capacity in Syria, the Corps spearheaded the fight against Daesh and other terrorism outfits in the region, and is now sharing that experience, that invaluable experience, with its allies in this coalition.
Absolutely. I mean, I think what we need to really understand that the world, the word terrorism and definition of terrorism, it's unfortunately has been manipulated in the West. After 9/11, this was supposed to be a defined concept and defined sort of interpretation what terrorism is, but it has been sort of misused. So groups like MKO, who were terrorists, suddenly were taken out of the prescription, and they became a legitimate organization. Well, they've been involved in massacring huge number of people in Iran, in Iraq, and indeed even American citizens, American interests during the Shah time in Iraq. And so really what we've got now, it seems to be from the Western perspective, terrorists are those who are opposing the interest of the West. And indeed, freedom fighters are the ones that they identify with. And we are seeing that being played out in these separatist groups, et cetera, from one side, and then from other side, legitimate sort of military of a nation is being sort of marked and marked or attempt to market as terrorists. In same time, 2 years of most visible genocide in the history of mankind is being sort of tolerated, and the war crimes and genocide is being rewarded by financial support, political support, etc. The hypocrisy is very clear. What we are really talking about here is actually working against a definition of terrorism, which is understood and is indeed is legitimate, and not the interpretation that United States and West is putting on this. You know, that those who are fighting for the dignity and preservation of life in Palestinian lives are terrorists, and those who are committing the genocide are legitimate. This sort of hypocrisy should not play a role, and it does not play a role in the discussion we're having today. The discussion we're having today is very clear that you can't make one nation secure without cooperation between the regional powers. And this is what is happening in Iran now in the region, under the sort of direction of Iran. And indeed, it's going to bring benefit to everyone in the region and make everyone safe and secure.
And thank you, Mr. Shahjad. And Ali, you want to weigh in on that? At the heart of these drills, these anti-terror drills, we have the IRGC completely demonized by the West, their anti-terror icon assassinated in General Qasem Soleimani 4 years ago. And then anyway, the IRGC has gone, and any activity that it's been involved in, it's been basically, at the invitation of Iraq and Syria at very desperate times for both those countries.
Well, we as the people of the West Asian nations who were attacked by the terrorism, we all know what were the blessings we had after General Martyr Qasem Soleimani went into Iraq to stop the invasion of Daesh in Iraqi provinces, as well as in Syria. General Soleimani helped the people of Syria, the people of Lebanon, to face those terrorist groups that were trying to invade the whole region. The Americans on the other side, by then, I'm talking about 2014, they were claiming that the elimination of the state of ISIS would take for at least 20 years. This was these were the words of the a top U.S. general who became later the U.S. National Security Advisor of the first Trump administration. I'm talking about General Michael Flynn. By then, they were trying to enable those terrorist groups to invade the whole region and to topple the elected governments and to shatter the national armies of the Syrian and the Iraqi states, as well as in Lebanon, of course. But we know that the resistance fighters who were backed by the General Qasem Soleimani and Al-Quds force were able to deter those terrorists, to defeat those terrorists in many battlefields. And I think this is the main reason why the Americans took the decision to assassinate General Soleimani, because he was a true defender of the sovereignty of the nations of West Asia, because he was a true defender against the terror that was backed by the United States and its allies. So the Americans, they went to designate the real fighters of the terrorists as the so-called terrorists, when they designated the IRGC as a terrorist organization. In fact, the Americans and the Israelis and their vassals in the region, they have been the real funders and aiders of the terrorists, because we know that the U.S. hegemonic project in the region is based on using many tools. They use governments, they use terrorist groups, and they use many other terrorist tactics. Of course, in the case of Iran, your report mentioned that there were 17,000 victims of terror inside Iran during the last four decades. We all know that Khalq terrorist organization is being aided by the Americans. They are being hampered, and they have a huge compound in Bosnia. They are being funded by the Americans and other regional parties. And the main mission of those terrorists is to carry out terrorist attacks inside Iran. I think that Iran has, made it clear that they cannot play easy when dealing with the terrorists. And during the last aggression on Iran, the 12 days war, we have seen that such terrorists, they can play a major role in the benefit of the aggressors. They have been using them as tools to enable the targets of the aggression held by the Americans and the Zionists. So it's important now that Iran and its neighbors and the SCO member states and other players would come together to share the experience here and to learn the lessons that Iran has been experiencing during the last years.
And those are very good points, Ali. Thank you for sharing them. And Mr. Shahjada, these drills underway, Iran says, for most of the part, they're in the East Azerbaijan province. Some small dimensions are also taking place in the Persian Gulf. But Iran says that they're more than just a military drill. The exercise sends multi-layered strategic messages across political, security, and economic arenas for the region and a world. What do you suppose that message is?
Well, that message is very clear. It's clear that the regional governments and nations have come together, united, to work together to eliminate this sort of abuses abuses which have been supported and promoted by the West. And also it gives very clear signal as regard as legitimacy of sort of regional power armed forces in actually coming together to do this. I mean, look, General Soleimani, whatever they say in the West, which indeed is not even goes as far as considering him as a terrorist, but he was sanctioned, financial sanction under terrorism. But nevertheless, the fact is around the world and in the region itself, he got the largest and the biggest funeral that anyone could get. This is a military man who they accuse of being sort of involved in unsavory acts of terrorism. But in the region, he is seen in completely different way. And this exercises right now, it actually re-emphasized that in region, governments and people are recognizing the legitimacy of coming together of these powers and these armed forces to eradicate the greatest danger to the safety and security in the region, which indeed is being orchestrated and supported by the West and the Zionist state.
Thank you, Mr. Shajari. And Ali, for years we've seen the usual suspects usually hold drills. We hear of them annually, U.S. and South Korea, obviously U.S. and Indonesia, the U.S. and the Philippines. We have these the MILEX, the European Union's annual drills they've had for a few years going now. We haven't seen anything new and unconventional. We have, but not often, albeit unconventional, we say today, but perhaps this is the new emerging normal for tomorrow. So what is the signal for a changing global order, these new emerging alliances?
Well, of course, we know that the Americans now, they are trying to affect the way that the new world order is going to shape, because they know they can't control the issue anymore. They know that other actors have already emerged, and they want to have their share in the new world order. The unipolar world order is over. And now, if you take a look to the Asian powers, you got China, mainly, you got Russia, and you got Iran, and you got Pakistan, you got other, you got India, of course. Those states, I don't think that the Americans in their vision towards the remaining decades of this century, they want any regional Asian power to be competing with them and maybe sharing the new world order with them. That's why, if you take a look, for example, to India, even if the Americans were signaling they're willing to be friends with India and to enforce the Indians and to help them economically and on other levels, they would not accept a thriving in India that would put the Indians to be their competitors. The same goes for other Asian states. That's why I think that this is the right timing now that all Asian powers to put the division, what divides them aside and come together to cooperate, because the West, led by the United States, they are looking into the East as if there's a threat to endanger their hegemony over the world order. That's why they are dealing with every state divided on its own. You know the saying that says, united we stand, divided we fall. I think this is the main proverb that Asian powers should keep in mind in the next decades, in the next years and decades, because the Americans are trying to topple all powers of the East they don't want any cooperation to take place between China and other Asian powers such as Iran, Pakistan, even India. And of course, they don't want a Eurasian connection when we are talking about the major role of Russia here. That's why the war in Ukraine is still going. And the Americans, they are not actually proving that they really want to end the war. It's in their favor. That's why I think that Russia, China, Iran, Pakistan, and even India, they can make a different sphere of influence in the whole region, in the whole Eurasian region. And I think that the Americans know that, and they don't want to see such drills taking part among the Central Asian states as the Sahand 2025 today in Iran.
All right, gentlemen, thank you both. Time has gotten the better of us, but appreciate having you both on. It was a pleasure checking in with both of you. Mr. Masoud Shajadeh there joining us from London, and Mr. Ali Murad joining us from Beirut. And this brings us to the end of your Spotlight program. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back, dear listeners, and thank you for staying with us. Iran Radio presents some interesting facts about the Holy Quran. The word Bismillah appears 114 times in the Quran. It occurs twice in chapter An-Naml, whereas chapter Tawbah is the only surah which does not begin with Bismillah. Quran believes in life after death, and the Quran teaches us that besides having a body, a human being also has a spirit, a soul. And when a person dies, the physical body vanishes, while the soul remains. We are here, and we continue our broadcast from Iran Radio with these incredible programs. Our next program is news, keeping you in the know with all the latest updates. Then we have A to Z of life. Next up, we will dive into a collection of our finest radio productions. Following that, Islamic Laws clarifies faith for everyday life. Hujjatul Islam, Sheikh Javed Akbari, hosts Islamic Laws, discussing Islamic jurisprudential ruling based on the fatwas of prominent scholars. Each episode addresses practical religious questions and explores common issues that arise in daily life. Stay tuned for the news, please.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran says it remains open to diplomacy on its peaceful nuclear program if Washington changes its approach and engages in mutually beneficial talks. More Palestinian civilians lose their lives in fresh Israeli strikes across the Gaza Strip as regime continues to violate the ceasefire agreement with Hamas. And Israeli forces kill two Palestinian young men near the occupied West Bank city of Al-Khalid following operation against the regime forces. Hello, everyone, and welcome to World News. Iran's foreign minister says Tehran remains open to diplomacy on its peaceful nuclear program if Washington changes its approach and engages in mutually beneficial negotiations.
It depends on the U.S.
If they change their approach and be prepared for a fair